Hello and welcome to the brand new podcast Ashes to Ashes, where we'll be talking all things cricket between England and Australia ahead of the first test match which starts this week. On today's programme, we'll hear all about the gossip from both camps leading up to Brisbane, look back at some of the most memorable and not so memorable moments if you're an England fan of the test matches at the Gabba. We'll also discuss all the issues surrounding Ben Stokes and whether he should feature in any part of the tour. Who should be in and who should be out? We'll pick our Ashes 11 and we'll give our predictions for the series. Will it be another Aussie whitewash down under, or can England upset the apple cart and come back with the urn? You're listening to Burst. Okay, and on today's first ever Ashes podcast, we've got James Furnish, the stat man.
Cheers, mate. Pleasure to be here.
A fellow MA radio production student. We have two special guests in the studio, Oliver Parsons and Jack Richardson, both university cricketers and lifelong England fans. How are we, gents?
Good to be here. I'm excited.
Not too bad myself. Thank you, Tim.
Excellent to see you. And also we have our 12th man, who's the technical player in the studio, Will Trimble. Good to see you, Will. Thanks for coming along. So first off, we're going to talk about all the gossip that we've heard sort of over the last week or so. One of which, I guess, is the biggest news that Tim Payne has been included in the Ashes side for Australia, the first time in sort of 8 years or so. Yeah. He's only ever played four test matches. What do we think about that selection? What does it mean? Is it a desperate move by Australia?
He's likely to play as well, isn't he?
He's in the first 11. Yeah. So any thoughts on that, Jack?
Well, a little funny fact about Tim Payne, actually, is he scored his last 100, Test Match 100, in 2006. Darren Lehman's last Test Match 100 was in 2007, who's actually the Australian coach. So that gives you the idea of what my thoughts are to his selection.
Well, so do you think it's a Darren Lehman has heavily influenced that selection? Are they quite pally, do you reckon?
They could be from playing days.
Yeah. Well,
I just thought they were a bit desperate with the wicketkeeper. I think you've picked a man that's kept four times in the last 2 years for Tasmania and Sheffield Shield cricket. I just think they're desperate. I think Wade's been out of form and they're just desperate.
Who would you have picked? There's not many out there.
There's not many. With them only playing, with them having less states than we've got counties, there's less wicket keepers playing. But I'd have gone with Neville. I'd have gone with Peter Neville.
Yeah. Well, apparently Payne was, last season in the Sheffield Shield, was understudy to another guy, so he wasn't really keeping anyway. So to pick him instantly with the gloves, because I think Bancroft keeps as well, who's meant to be opening the batting, so they've almost sacrificed a batsman to have Payne in, so they must think pretty highly of him to pick him. But
yeah. It's been lambasted in the press, hasn't it? Aussie press.
Yeah, so
have been going heavy on them, haven't they?
I think so. I think Shane Warne's come out and said some things about sort of going backwards in selection. We'll wait and see, but it's refreshing to see some controversy on the other side,
yeah,
not just
it?
England sort of having all the problems. Obviously, there's been news about Jake Ball being injured as well. He's supposedly supposed to be back for the test match.
Yeah.
Will he be someone that will be selected, do you think?
I think he will. I think Farris likes him. I think he suits Australia's conditions. Bit of extra bounce, does a bit with the seam. But I think ultimately we're short on seamers and I think he will play.
Sure.
Would you play him if he's not 100% fit?
I wouldn't play him over Overton if he wasn't 100% fit, but okay. I think he will be fit by the sounds of things.
We will have a better discussion about that later. Is there a problem in general with the injuries that England have had? You look at the amount of seamers that we've had out. I mean, I could list them out. Ball got injured, Roland Jones, Steve Finn. I'm sure there's others I can't remember off the top of my head, but there's been a lot of injuries to seamers. Then you look at Australia, who've had injury problems, but Stark and Hazelwood just didn't go to the South Africa tour. South Africa tour is a big tour, especially if you're an Australian, and they just didn't go in preparation for the Ashes. Have we overbowled our bowlers, and is that why they are getting injured at these crucial points?
This is an interesting topic, and I recently saw a post on Twitter by Harry Gurney. He made it clear when referring to an article that fast bowlers are doing far too much work in the gym. He seems to put it down to that. I mean, that's up for debate. But he seemed to be pretty adamant that fast bowlers are not doing enough bowling, so their bodies aren't used to the actual bowling itself.
Okay.
I, I'm not sure. I think we've had quite a long break since we played West Indies in the summer. I don't know, maybe in terms of resting our fast bowlers for that. I think it's just one of those things. We've just had a period where they've just got injured in the warm-up games and whatever, and I think maybe we've been a bit unlucky. I mean, there's some surprise selections and people that haven't gone. Plunkett being one of them, but even he, there was talk that he got injured in the 2020, so I just think we've been a bit unlucky.
You've got someone like Anderson, who was rested towards the back end of the season, wasn't he, because they want to keep him fit.
I mean, he's rested full stop.
Yeah, so isn't it? So are these like people who are not in the squad, are they overboard themselves to get in the squad when someone like Anderson can rest, can't he? There's like a safety net with him over the other players.
But I think it is an interesting point, because there was quite a bit of stick on the Australian selectors for not picking Stark and Hazelwood. But ultimately,
this is the only series that matters, isn't it?
Yeah.
This is the big one, isn't it? This is the one you want to win.
South Africa's still a huge series for them, away from home. So to not pick them, it's a really interesting point. And I think it'll pay dividends for them, I really do. There's been a lot of players saying things in the media as well, a lot of ex-players saying things. What do you make of all the stuff that's coming out of the Australian camp from people like David Warner? Josh Hazlewood's come out today and said that he's seen weaknesses and this kind of thing, and it's a little bit sledging before the game started. Is this typical of an Australian side, or are they going over the top?
Oh, I think we see it every Ashes, don't we? When we go down under, we see them come and attack it. I mean, I read somewhere that they were saying that the England batsmen are going to get a barrage of bouncers. We hear this every time we go out there. I don't think our batsmen fear the Australian bowling. I don't think that they fear the pace of them, because I've heard a lot about the pace. I just think it's classic Australian sort of talk before a series. I'd be surprised if it affects any of the England players.
Yeah, and I mean, some of the ex-players have come out and said some pretty strong things as well. Ricky Ponting being one, saying that he honestly thinks that England are going to get whitewashed or hammered.
They say it every time, don't they? 5-0. They just picked it every time, 5-0.
Yeah.
Which isn't, by going by form.
Well, I mean, it's one of those series that you just literally do not have a clue. I have no idea what's going to happen. Mm. That's what makes it so intriguing.
Yeah. Both batting lines have got serious question marks. Mm-hmm. Bowling lineups are much stronger on both sides, so it makes for a very interesting series, I think.
Yeah, it really does. Okay, so on to the review. And obviously, we haven't got any Ashes games to review, but there have been a lot of friendlies. There's been Sheffield Shield games on the Australian side. So we'll look at the England friendlies to start with. The warm-up games have been against substandard sides. Previously, I can remember listening to, I think it was the Michael Vaughan podcast with Tuffers, and they spoke about how Australia used to barrage England when they came over to the shores and hit them with the second-best Australia team that they could and really hit them hard early. And the second-best Australian team sort of 20 years ago was a very, very good side, and it'd probably be the first team Australia side now. They've now flipped that round and done the opposite. They've put England against sides that are substandard. They've put them on conditions that are slow, that aren't going to replicate what's going to happen in Brisbane. What do you make of those tactics? Are they fair? Are they ethical? Is it a good move?
It's just mind games, isn't it? More mind games. Like, it's a clever thing to do. You're getting in the head of the opponent. You're sort of softening them up, aren't you? You're sort of keeping them on edge.
Yeah,
it's a clever thing for them to do. I don't blame them for doing it.
I disagree. I think it's ridiculous. I think Stoneman came out and said that the majority of the bowling attack that he's faced has been like a weak Div 1 side. He's put someone like Stoneman, who's under pressure anyway, he's put him in a bit of form. He's scored a bit of runs. I don't understand why they've put such a weak side out and got our batsmen sort of in the runs. Even Gary Balance has scored runs.
That's amazing.
That's true, though. They're giving us valuable time at the wicket. Our batsmen, like, you look at Milan, scored his first 100 for England. Yeah. They're giving our batsmen prime time in Australian conditions. I think it only works in our favour.
You're looking at that as a batting point of view. When you look at the bowling side and you see someone like Craig Overton taking a handful of wickets, you think he took 4 for in one game, you see Chris Wokes, who hasn't been bowling well up until this point, he's taking a lot of wickets. Does it give those guys a false sense of security that they're actually doing well when they're bowling against sort of lesser batsmen? Mm. I think it works both sides.
I think they know what they're playing against. I think it's given them a bit of confidence. It's given them a bit of rhythm. They've bowled quite a few overs on slow pitches, on batsman-friendly pitches. I think it suits us.
Is that the best prep, though, isn't it? If you're going to come into, especially at Brisbane, you're going to be playing on these slow pitches and you're coming into this like tennis ball bounce pitch, going to be right down your throat. Is it?
I mean, it probably isn't as good prep in terms of batting, but then it's we've spent time out there.
Yeah.
I think in terms of bowling, overs under your belt's fine. Mm-hmm. Whether you're playing on slow or quick wickets, I don't think it matters. I think overs under your belt is key, and we've been given that.
But I think it almost fools the English press as well, and the English selectors, when you see guys do really well in these warm-up games, and you know, you see someone like Overton take, you know, I'm not slagging Overton off, but he's not done amazing things in county cricket, and all of a sudden he could be playing his first test match, Ashes test match, because he's got a four for against the under-19s.
Yeah, but that, I think he's been given that opportunity through injury. I don't think it's in terms of it's conning the selectors. I just think he's been given an opportunity through injury.
Okay. And what can we expect at the Gabba? Last time we played at the Gabba, obviously Johnson had a particularly good game. We actually had a very good first day from memory. We had, I think, Broad took six for...
It was probably the only day we won of that series, actually.
Yeah. But we ultimately still lost the game, and it was a very quick deck. A lot of people compared it to the Wacker, which it is anyway, but can we expect more of the same with Stark and Cummings in the side?
I think it sets up, obviously, perfect for batting. It'll be good run scored, but I think every morning session there's always opportunity for the bowlers, always a bit of moisture about. So the opportunities are there. I think the team that bowls better is going to win the test match at the end of the day. Both teams will score runs.
Okay, mate, you've won the toss. What are you going to do?
We're going to have a bowl first.
Okay, and what's the thinking?
There's a bit of grass in the wicket, and I want to give my young bowling attack the best chance to take 10 wickets.
Okay, so that was not Nasser Hussain and Ian Chappell.
That wasn't Nasser Hussain.
Having a discussion at the Gabba. But this leg, we're going to talk about on this day. We're going to talk about what happens in first test matches at Brisbane. Obviously, the clip that we reenacted there was Nasser Hussain winning the toss in 2002-03 series on an absolute road and choosing to bowl first because he thought there was a bit in the wicket. Unfortunately, Australia went on to score something like 560 for four.
That's a shocker, isn't it?
And we went on to lose the game. I think Matthew Hayden scored a hatful. Ponting scored 100 as well. So that was a bad day. Some of the things that happened on that day, if we can remember, in 06-07, Stephen Harmison's infamous first ball to second slip. That was another.
I remember watching that live and just being like, oh.
It just set the tone. Yeah. You know what I mean? Just set the tone for the whole series. And that was another whitewash. I don't know, anybody else got any on the day?
So, looking back in history a little bit, into the test match itself, the first test match of the Ashes at the Gabba, looking back at Jess Thompson's first match against England, he ended up taking 9 for 105 in the match. He was later quoted in an interview saying, "I enjoy hitting batsmen more than getting them out. I like to see blood on the pitch."
Bloody hell.
Charmer.
The Aussies haven't changed.
That's horrible. I've got one also from 02-03, just about Simon Jones. So, in his second test match ever, so he'd played against India in the summer, second test match ever, first test match of the series, obviously, in the Ashes, running for a ball down mid-on, I believe, goes slide for the ball, does his knee, out with the rest of the tour, and probably hindered his whole career, only played 18 test matches after that. Obviously, it was part of the 05 Wonder Series.
Only played 18 test matches?
Only played 18 test matches. Yeah, terrible. Really, you think like his career could have had, even though it was such a short. He's obviously known for the 05 stage, which is
That's mad. I didn't know that.
Yeah, and it also, and I remember I've heard Flintoff talk about, because Simon Jones got injured there, he was also injured going into it.
Flintoff
had to bowl a lot more overs in this, and there's some disagreement about with him and Flower. It might be, I can't remember who was coach at the time, but there was some.
Peter Moores was the coach, I believe.
Well, no. Two.
Oh, sorry. Oh, two. Oh, sorry.
I'm not sure
O2.
It was, but
Fletcher
was,
would have been. Duncan
yeah,
Fletcher.
Duncan Fletcher. Sorry. Yeah, he would. There was some disagreement with him because he was taking a lot of injections to get through the series, and he had to bowl a lot more overs in that match because of Simon Jones, obviously, out of action the first day, he loses Seymour straight away.
Flint off didn't play in the O2 series.
You sure? I'm pretty sure I've heard him speak about it.
No, Flint off's first Ashes game.
Oh, is it sure? Oh, sorry. Misinformed by a different podcast. God.
Just that man.
Yeah.
Was that series when Simon Jones got injured? I think that was the one when NASA won the toss.
Yeah, that same. Yeah, same yeah. game.
Same
he won,
game.
He won the toss, bowled, and then Simon Jones got injured yeah, that yeah. day as well.
Terrible
so
morning.
An just absolute disaster.
One of the worst days for English cricket. That was. Yeah. That was a real shocker. I remember Michael Vaughan at cover dropping Hayden when he was on about 100 odd, and he just shelled the easiest catch. And he went on to score like another 80 runs. It was just a horrible day for England. But that's not going to happen again. What about that stat man? What about that stat you pulled up earlier about...
Am I a stat man? I've just got something wrong, so I don't know if I'm the official stat man.
No, you can come back. You can redeem yourself.
What do you want to know?
When's the last time Australia lost a test match at Brisbane? Against any side?
Yeah, against the West Indies. They lost,
you know this one.
In 1988, I believe, was the last time they lost.
19? That's 30 years.
30
they
years
have not
on.
Been beaten at Brisbane.
It's been a couple of. There's been a few draws there, obviously. England, obviously, was a draw in 2010.
Yeah.
So there is hope.
I think they've won 21 of their last 28 at the Gabba.
That's just
yeah,
crazy,
they've only drawn
crazy.
6 or 7. Mm. That is a ridiculous stat. And it's just so, I mean, for it to be the first test match in the series, I know it's very easy to say, but if you win the first test, the other side's got to win two to get ahead of you, and that's quite a big
we
thing.
I don't even think we have to win it. If we draw at the Gabba, Graham Swan said this, if we draw at the Gabba, the Aussie media will be straight on their back, especially after the selection headaches that they've had.
Yeah.
If we turn up and play good cricket at the Gabba, I think we're into them. I think we could have a good series.
Yeah,
but
it's a banker for them, isn't it? They look at it as their 1-0 up straight from the start.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And now on to the issue of Ben Stokes. For those that don't know, Ben Stokes is England's talisman, England's all-rounder, and he was in an altercation a couple of months ago along with fellow cricketer Alex Hales outside a nightclub where the two got into a fight. Ben Stokes was the main perpetrator, and you can see it. I mean, the video's on YouTube. It's been brandished all across the media. Ben Stokes is punching this guy out. Essentially, he injured his hand, which was another issue being so close to the Ashes. There is an ongoing investigation now. There has been some reports come out today that he has given his final statement. So things will be resolved very, very soon. It would be interesting to get your guys' views on whether, from a cricketing perspective, ethically, should Ben Stokes go? He is England's best player. He is detrimental to England's prospects if he doesn't play in the Test series. I mean, where do you stand, Rico, on sort of Jack, if he doesn't go, and what where do you stand? If you're an English management, would you pick Ben Stokes?
Obviously, once the police investigations are over, I think he's a must. The way England, the ECB have handled the situation, I think it's clear how much they value him. I believe I saw early in the summer as well, Michael Vaughan talked about it, once this had come out, that he had previously been on a night out during a test match, and the ECB were able to squash that through the media, but obviously this got out of hand very quickly, so it's clear that he is obviously a talisman for them, but obviously off the pitch he's been doing some interesting stuff, to say the least.
Yeah,
he's a hothead, isn't he? But I think you sort of expect, if you're going to ask him to play on field and be this fiery character and this aggressive character, there's gonna be some off field antics. You don't switch between these two sort of characteristics and sort of ways of behaving on a sports field and off a sports field. I think he shouldn't have been out mid series anyway. I think that's ridiculous that they were out mid series, but you almost expect some antics with Ben Stokes wherever he goes.
Just another hypothetical for you lads. So if he say England were 2-0 down, so the series maybe is looking like they might not win, is there a point in bringing him out? Is it a distraction again? Is there, because if he goes the crowds are going to be like on him. It's going to be,
he's a kind of character that probably thrives on that, thrives on that exposure. For me, I think he's the best all-rounder in the world. I don't think he can be replaced. I think if England don't play him, essentially you have to pick two players to replace him. It's like the whole England side changes on this one guy. Does anybody else you pick? I know there's some other good players in there like Root and Bairstow and Moen Ali, but this guy is the pivotal player in the side. If you don't pick him, the whole team changes. If you don't pick one of these other guys, you can still have the same structure. If Moen Ali gets dropped or whatever, you can bring in a spinner. If Bairstow gets dropped, you can bring in a batsman. This guy cannot be replaced. And if you're an England fan, it was said on Michael Vaughan and Tuffer's programme, if you're an England fan paying good money, thousands of dollars, to go out and watch the best England team play, and Ben Stokes isn't there, essentially you're getting robbed of your money. But you have to decide whether that is Ben Stokes' fault or is that the fault of the ECB if they don't choose to take him. However, you look at something like Kevin Peterson, who got dropped for completely different reasons. However, he didn't punch a guy. And that's the ethical thing that I look at. And I think, why have the ECB looks like they're going to choose to pick a guy who can punch in some, that goes out all the time, can punch a guy outside a nightclub, yet drops the best batsman England have ever had, arguably, the leading England run scorer in all formats. What's the deal with that? Why is Peterson not playing Test cricket?
I think that's a very controversial topic. Obviously, Peterson was a complete maverick, even more so than Stokes, I think. And obviously, there was many things which happened with Peterson. It wasn't just that one-off occasion. I think there was a knock-on effect with him, and it came to a point where I think that decision had to be made. I didn't agree with the way it happened, but when you look at Ben Stokes, it's clear that they've put him in a slightly different bracket and treated him slightly differently to they would have with Peterson in that situation. I think that's clear to see.
I think it comes down to almost controversy. I think Ben Stokes is liked around the dressing room, and I don't think Ken Peterson was.
Yeah. Yep.
So I think maybe they used the whole antics with Peterson as a bit of a scapegoat to get rid of him.
Oh, that's definitely, isn't it?
That's, yeah.
He wasn't liked among the bigger personalities.
Exactly.
It's been written in books. They've all talked about it, haven't they?
It's been said. But in my opinion, if I'm in England dressing room and I don't like Kevin Peterson, but there's so much pressure in the media on the England cricket team, it doesn't matter who they play against. If I know that I've got a guy who's going to win me a test match and he's sitting across from me, he might be someone that I don't like or I don't get on with, I'd make sure he's all right, though, still. If he's going to win me test matches, I'm gonna make sure that he's all right. I'm going to look after him. I'm going to make an extra effort. It's almost as if England made even less of an effort, but he's the best player. So if you're sat in the dressing room and you really don't get on with someone, but you know that they're going to win you a game, what would you do in that situation?
It's difficult. I'd tend to agree with you. I don't think he should have been dropped anyway. But we don't know what he was like. I mean, everything that I've heard, I think he was a nightmare in the dressing room. And maybe they thought that the side would benefit from him not being around.
I think it's a nightmare to some players, not all players. To certain players.
I think a lot of it came down to Andy Flower as well. I don't think he liked the fact that Peterson challenged a lot of what he would. He liked a dictatorship. He liked to make sure England were the way he had them. And I think Kevin Peterson challenged that instantly from day one. And I just don't think that them two ever saw eye to eye on anything. And I think that really stems back from that. Because there's stuff Joe Root still talks about, Peterson, and how he helped him play spin and things like that. I think, although he wasn't liked by the players, I think, as any sportsman would, if there's a guy in your team who's going to help you win and be successful, you want him in there. You want to be the best team in the world. England did at the time, probably just coming off the back of being the best team in the world. I think it was pretty political behind the scenes, I think, with Kevin Peterson. Doesn't seem to be that way so much with Stokes.
I think it's unfortunate that Peterson was playing in an era where we had Andy Flower and Peter Moores as coaches. Not saying they're bad coaches, but they're coaches that didn't fit the mould of Peterson. Duncan Fletcher did, because he's a guy that let you play. And I think the current era in English cricket is we are a free-branded cricket in one day and test matches, and Peterson would probably thrive under this management, and it's a shame that he's not playing. And that's probably why Ben Stokes has done so well too. But just back onto Stokes, if Ben Stokes doesn't play a test match, can England win the Ashes?
I don't think so. No. it's like you said before, it's hard to replace what he has for the team. You say you need two players to replace him.
Sure. I'm probably in agreement.
I think Australia are weak. I think there's opportunities for us. Now, had it been in England and Ben Stokes wasn't playing, I still think we'd beat them. But down under, I'm not as confident. And obviously it'd be nice to have Ben Stokes, but I think there's opportunities for us.
I think it evens up the team's balance, both teams' balance. If you look at them both in the squads they've picked for the first test, there's no clear all-rounder in both sides. I mean, Mo and Ali probably is for us, and they've got a few who can bat a bit, who bowl, but there's no, both teams are evenly matched now. They've both got questionable top orders. There's no all-rounder really on both sides, couple of half and halves, but like, it is set up to be a perfect series, I think.
Well, I mean, if he does play, it'll be a huge bonus, obviously, because I can remember the last time we went over there, we obviously got whitewashed, but Ben Stokes was the only debut in that series. But in the fifth test match, he was the only guy to score 100 against what they were saying was the most difficult conditions you'll play in test cricket. I mean, Mitchell Johnson was bowling literally thunderbolts. They
on fire.
Yeah, and I think they were saying in the dressing room, you know, you had guys like Ali Cook and all these top players who faced guys like Shahrabakhtar, Brett Lee and all these guys, and they're actually saying how Mitchell Johnson was bowling the quickest that they've ever faced. And I think the issue was because of his action, they couldn't see the ball. So you've just got this ball coming at 95 miles an hour that you don't really pick up very well. So it'll be a real shame if Stokes doesn't go, but... It is up for debate. Do you actually think he will go? Just out of curiosity.
Yeah.
I think he'll go.
Yeah.
So you think he'll play at least one or two test matches?
Yeah, I think he'll go, definitely. Yeah. I think, with what I've read in the media as well, I think they've set it up to almost make him come out as a hero.
They've dealt it so well, haven't they? They've span it, or maybe it's what happened, but they span it so well, protected him so well that he's coming out.
I think that's from when it initially happened,
where it looked like he was getting, well, I think it was the Sun, wasn't it? It was, look at this guy. He's supposed to be a role model. And it seems like it's been turned and turned and turned. You probably from the ECB, who have then, here's your hero, here's your knight in shining armour.
Yeah, I think he was branded as a thug from
there
the start.
Yeah.
And now he's...
I've been to the club where he's been. There is thugs in there. Yeah.
I think if he's cleared of all charges, he'll play and there'll be no questions from the public. And everyone will be fine with it as long as he's cleared of all charges. I think he'll play and...
I think it's a really interesting point that you bring up about him being a hero and how he's been projected. Obviously, I'll just draw back on Peterson was drawn out as a villain in the media. Stokes has done something arguably worse, and he's a hero.
Much worse. You know, that's so much worse.
On video, it's caught on video.
Sponsors dropped him. I think New Balance dropped him from his big sponsorship, and he's
this heroic figure. And it's really interesting how PR and things come out, and if you want them to be
next year,
it'll
be smoothed over. He'll be back to being the face of England again.
He was putting the stickers on his bat. I think he's going. I think he knows something we don't. I think he's going out there.
There was only one stick, and it was
a Red Bull. I saw that.
Do you think that it could be influenced on how England do in the first test? Could it be if England win the first test, the England management go, Maybe Overton did play
as the so-called all-rounder and just had a stormer, played amazing. I know it probably won't happen, but...
And England win, yeah.
If a side's winning, do you drop... I know it's Ben... I think it's Ben Stokes, though. Who's the...
It's Ben, but all the baggage that comes with it.
No, Ben Stokes plays straight away.
You bring him straight
Even if England are up 1 or 2 nil.
Ben Stokes plays. Is he,
okay.
I think so. Personally, I think so. I think he plays. And I'd be surprised... If
they fly him over, he's not coming to like carry the drinks, is he? So if he flies over, he's playing. Surely you can't.
And you can bet your bottom dollar if Ben Stokes plays in that second Test match, he's scoring 100 and he's scoring a big 100 at that. I promise you that.
How are they?
So this is How's That. Who's in? Who's out? This is where we basically pick our 11s or the 11s we think will play, and then we'll probably have a discussion about the 11s that we. Believe should play for the ones that will actually get picked. We'll go through England's side first. I think we can all agree that Cook and Stoneman are going to be opening the batting. Stoneman's gone very well in the friendlies. He's scored a couple of hundred, well, he's scored at least 100, and he's got He's got runs, so he'll play open up with Cook. James Vince, number three. This is pretty much dead set on, I'd say, that Vince is going to play. What has James Vince done to deserve the number three spot? Anyone?
I don't know what he's done to deserve a spot on the tour, to be honest. I think that's a bit of a surprise. I wouldn't bet him at three. He wouldn't be in my side.
Yeah, just you think he's the one coming in after one of the two gets out. He's the guy. You want someone who's stable. His average in test matches, here we go, is under 20. In 11 innings, he's averaging under 20. That's just test matches. I don't know who else you'd put there, though, but that's obviously up to debate with you guys, who you'd think.
It comes down to pedigree. I think the selection is purely based on talent. We've all seen it. The guy gets to 40 in test matches off 50 balls, looks absolute class, and then one silly shot and he's out. I think there's so much potential with him. I think it's a big gamble, but I think it is something that could potentially play off in Australian conditions. He's a big back foot player. It'll be interesting to see how he goes, definitely. But I don't mind the selection too much, to be honest.
The issue that England have is his replacement is probably going to be Gary Balance.
Yeah.
And he's opposite end of the spectrum. You've got Vince, who's very flamboyant, likes to play shots. Balance is the kind of guy who likes to grind and bat for a long time. He's not a like-for-like replacement. And neither are heavy run scorers. Your best batsman... I don't know whether the culture's changed, but it always used to be your best batsman bats at three. And if I look in every side across world cricket, pretty much the best batsman's wanting to bat four. Whether that's because they don't want to get exposed against that new ball too early.
Yep.
They could be in literally first over of the game. But why has that culture changed? Ricky Ponting used to bat three. Michael Vaughan used to bat three. He was England's best player.
I just think Root has he enjoys batting four. I just think he feels four's better for him, especially when he's captain. So I think that's the case with that one. But it leaves us open for a number three I'd rather James Vince played and scored no runs than watching Gary Balance.
True, that's a great point. I think that's what they put the selectors probably as well.
I think we probably all agree with that one. If Gary Balance does get selected, what would that mean to English cricket? What would that mean to English cricket? Because the guy's been dropped, I think, maybe twice now. He's certainly been dropped once, and he's come back in. I think the decision to pick him in the squad's heavily influenced by our captain. Mm. We keep going back to him, but I don't think he's scored a wealth of runs in County Championship. Why is he there and not someone like, Ben Foulkes, who scored a lot of runs?
I think Balance did have quite a successful year, didn't he, in County Cricket?
He may well have done it. I may well have done him an injustice.
But I think the difference is... I think I saw some stat on Sky that they did that the difference between county cricket and international cricket is like 10 miles per hour, like average speed.
Yeah,
he's obviously just not good enough. He just can't handle that step up, and I think that's the difference.
I don't think, even if he does get selected, I don't think he'll bat three. He'll only bat five.
So who would bat three?
I think there would have to be a bit of jumbling. I think Root would move up. I don't see him coming in at three. I can't see it.
I can't see England putting Root at three. I think that's exactly what the Australians would want. If you're a bowler, if you're Mitchell Starc, Josh Hazlewood, would you rather bowl at James Vince or would you rather bowl at Gary Balance? That's the nuts and bolts of it.
Gary Balance, I'd rather bowl at.
You'd rather bowl at Balance?
Definitely.
100%.
Balance is never going to take a game away from you, which is what captains always sort of worry about the night before. And I guess James Vince can. Well, we haven't seen it in international cricket, but certainly domestic cricket, Vince is very flamboyant and can play very good innings. He does captain Hampshire as well, does he not? So he has to have some responsibility on those shoulders. So hopefully that comes out in this series. But we're pretty sure that Vince is going to be batting three, certainly for the first test. Joe Root will bat four. David Milan, another one who's been very recently added to the side. He's not done too much, to be honest. He's scored 100 in the warm-up games, but then again, who hasn't? He hasn't scored a wealth of runs against the West Indies when he came into the side, and that's not a great attack. It's not a comparable attack to what he's going to be facing out there.
250s, just looking at his things now. 250, average of 23.
Yeah, the only comments I ever see made about him are, he can get down, he's gritty, he can fight out. if you're an England fan, that's not what you pay. That's not what you want to see on TV. I don't want to see a guy score 50 off 200 balls. But I want to see us take it to the Aussies.
Do you think they need that in case there is a collapse, which is in the last 18 months, England, or it may be longer, England being prone to a collapse? Do you need someone in there to hold the fort? Or,
in fairness, looking at that batting order, if I've got Vince, Root, Bairstow, Moeen Ali, you probably do need someone that's going to dig in. I don't think he digs in very well, Milan. Like, so I don't think he's the right guy. But you certainly need someone who's going to bat a period of time. I mean, Paul Collingwood used to play that role really, really well when he was batting around Peterson, batting around Flintoff. But is there anybody else out there who you would pick above Milan? Because obviously we know that balance is in the mix, but is there anybody else out there who you would think, oh, I want to give him a call and give him a go?
My approach would be, I would bat Bairstow in the top five.
You'd bat Bairstow five?
And I might even bat him at four and Root at three if we want to. I know that's not going to happen, but I'd bat Bairstow in the top five because I think he's good enough. I think he's a good enough player to bat in the top five of most sides around the world, if not all. I think he's a really good player. However, if he did do that, I don't think I'd give him the gloves. I think that's too much to ask.
So you'd need a keeper.
So then, with our squad, I'd then play Folks and bat him at seven.
About you, Rick?
I'd stick with Milan for what we've got. I mean, I think it's not necessarily the easy option, but they've gone for someone who's a bit older, a bit more experienced than maybe some of the other guys that are on the radar. I think some of the other guys, they're probably a bit too young. They probably didn't want to take them out as their first test series. They're probably looking them a bit more to the future. So he's a bit of a stop for the time being. He can do the job for the next year or two. I don't see him for the long haul, though.
I think that first, he played one innings in a 2020 game. I think it might have been against South Africa, where he looked brilliant.
He looked amazing, I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, and he scored runs. He did very, very well. I think that is heavily influenced him being selected.
They kind of backed himself into a corner, haven't they? Because who have they got who's experienced enough or anything like that to even come in? They've had him playing in the summer, and it seems like they've just stuck with him just because he played in the summer.
Yeah, and it is dangerous bringing in so many debutants.
Yeah.
I agree. I think he came in because of that one day innings. I think it was 2020.
2020,
was it? Yeah, 2020 against South Africa, yeah. And then he was the best of a bad bunch. I mean, Tom Wesley scored no runs.
Yeah, he had his chance, didn't he?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I just think they've gone with Milan really. What did he get? Did he get 150?
A couple of 50s. But it was a pretty rogue attack.
Painful 50s.
Yeah.
They were. And I don't know, Jonathan Trott, I never used to enjoy watching Jonathan Trott bat, or Paul Collingwood, really. It reminds me of that. But sometimes you need that in your sides, especially in Test cricket. Mm. I mean, it just goes to show how influential Stokes is, because if it was me and Stokes is available, I'd just get rid of Milan and I would put Bairstow five and I'd have Stokes six. I think Moeen Ali is more than capable of batting number seven. I don't know why Moeen Ali has to bat in this new regime at number eight. It baffles me, because he is a batsman and we just continue to bat him at number eight. What do you think about that?
I don't think he'll bat number eight this series without Stokes.
Oh no, he'll bat seven now. Yeah.
But I do agree. I think he'd probably... he's capable of batting six. Full strength side, him at number eight is a good thing. It is a strength with our depth, and he's proven that. But when we're struggling at the top, we don't have a number three, we don't have a number five.
Yeah.
It's difficult. I think I saw something in the Telegraph saying that he is going to be six. So, I mean, that's probably pretty good information to go off. So, his likelihood is that he's going to be batting six and Best will stay at seven. Personally, I'd have it the other way around. But I think the only problem with batting Ali higher is the any chances that he's had, he's always sort of... He's got one way of playing, it seems, Moeen Ali, and it suits him down the order. It's great. I don't think he averaged 50 in the last calendar year. That's great, you're happy with that, but if you start putting too much responsibility, I don't think it necessarily suits his game.
I think what I've been reading is he's gonna get a lot of short stuff out there. It's an area of his game where, for those that don't know, the Australian boundaries, especially at places like the MCG, are massively bigger than what you play over here. So often what they do is they bowl short and they have these guys three quarters out, and Moeen Ali's a guy that plays the pull shot quite lackadaisically. He throws his hands at it and it can tend to go in the air, and I've read a lot that he's been doing a lot of practice on the short ball in the nets, and that they plan to go short him. So it'll be interesting to see how he gets on with that battle, because it can play on your mind. As soon as you start thinking about the short ball, that's when you're in trouble. So I'm surprised that they're going to bat him at six, though. I would have thought that Bairstow would bat six. I'm with you on that. So Bairstow and Moen will be six and seven. I think we can all agree with that. Chris Wokes will probably be at number eight. Wokes has been a guy who's been injured. He got injured in the World Cup opener, didn't he? Against Bangladesh, I think. He's a guy that was doing really, really well. He came back into the side late in the summer and didn't look like he was fully fit.
Yeah, he struggled, didn't he?
He certainly wasn't bowling with any pace. He was bowling around 79, 80 miles an hour. He's a guy that can hit 87, 88 on the reg. What do we think about Wokes? He got some wickets in the warm-up game. Do you think he's going to be... are they his type of conditions out in Australia?
No, they're probably not. If we look at him, he's a swing bowler. But, like you say, he does have a yard of pace. So I think he'll be fine. I think he'll do well out there. I think he'll score runs with the bat as well. I think he's a good player. I think he's a genuine all-rounder. A bowling all-rounder, but I think he's a genuine all-rounder. I think he'll be fine. I think he'll be one of our best players this series. I think he'll take a lot of wickets.
Yeah, I think he's someone who relies on rhythm a lot. And clearly after his injury, he was struggling on the rhythm side of things. You could just see it. I haven't seen any of the footage too much from the warm-up games, but it sounds to me like he's been much more like he was earlier in the summer. So hopefully he can continue that on into the Ashes.
Yeah, I think we're all agreed that he's dead set on to play. And and if we have a fully fit Ben Stokes, he seriously is one of a world-class player. So hopefully Chris Wokes will be fully fit. We then move on to we all know that both Broad and Anderson are going to be playing. we come to the issue of the final seamer, and that's Jake Ball and Chris Overton. Overton's gone particularly well in the friendlies. Jake Ball has Jake Ball played a test match? Played test experience?
Yeah, I think he played a couple in Bangladesh, I think.
Okay, so he's certainly played one-day cricket, whereas Overton hasn't played any ODIs, I don't think. If you were a selector, would you pick Jake Ball or Chris Overton? Simple as that.
Oh, I'd pick Jake Ball.
You'd pick Jake Ball?
He's got more test experience. He has played a few tests. I think he's played in England a couple of times.
He's played three test matches.
Three tests.
Three, yeah.
And I think his bowling would probably suit Australia a little bit. Bit of bounce, bit of seam movement. I'd play him. I mean, it's a tough one. I'm not particularly excited by either of them. But I think I'd play Jake Ball.
What do you reckon, Rick?
I think I'd go for Overton, personally. I think he's just got a bit more... something a bit more about him. I think Jake Ball can go missing a little bit sometimes. I think Overton is some sort of personal step up. He'll put on the shirt and he'll really give it a go. Not that Jake Ball doesn't, but I think he can sometimes, in a few of the ODIs, few of the couple of test matches he's played, can go wandering a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at that bowling attack, there's certainly a lack of pace that's quite worrying. Certainly in comparison to the Australian side, and whenever we've sort of done well over there, we have had a bit of pace and a bit of bounce in our side. Does Jake Ball offer a bit more pace and bounce? I've not seen so much of Overton. I know Overton does a bit with the bat also. I just think Jake Ball does a little bit more with that regard. He hits
Do you need another all rounder in there?
It doesn't hurt if you bat as well, is what I'm saying. I mean, they are both in as a bowler. But I'm just looking at that bowling side, and I'm just not seeing.
It's an interesting one. It's an interesting one. If you chuck Stokes back in there, you'd think England have got every reason to pick Mason Crane, another spinner. But obviously, without that Stokes, without that extra bowler, you know, we have to almost pick another seam, especially with the chance of rain, which they're pretty heavy at Brisbane for this week, I think. I think a seam is pretty much dead set, but I would like to see Crane maybe involved later on down the line.
I think if Stokes goes and plays, I think Mason Crane will play. I think the balance of the side is perfect for that. I think they tried it a bit in the summer, and they played, who was it that they played, the spinner?
Dawson.
Liam Dawson.
Liam Dawson.
Yeah, in England they played. They tried that, didn't they, with the balance. When they had Stokes, they tried playing Liam Dawson.
Yeah.
With, so two spinners.
Yeah.
I like the balance of that side, but I don't think Dawson was a good enough spinner, so I'd like to see Mason Crane in there.
Is Mason Crane a good enough spinner? What's he done?
He's the only person in the team who's got Sheffield Shield experience, so he has got that under his belt.
Any of them could have gone and played Sheffield Shield.
Yeah, well, he was the first Englishman for over 20 years, I think, to be picked. And they could pick anyone if they wanted to, but they haven't. He was chosen by New South Wales as well, which is captained by Steve Smith. So it's not the worst call up to get.
He's a leggy as well. They do take wickets.
He's a leggy, but for me, if you look at his figures in the warm-up games, they're not that impressive.
Yeah,
he's been panned.
Yeah, I've got him here. So 0 for 89, 2 for 97, 3 for 78, 0 for 27. Not shocking.
His economies, though, in all of those, he's not going anything over 4. He's containing. Leggy goes, under 4 is good.
But yeah, I know you're speaking from experience there, and you'll always back the leggy. I know. But
Rico's never gone out under 4 though.
What I will say is, he's played one international game. He's not done enough to
20
earn,
years old as well.
To play for England in an Ashes series, just because he's a leg spinner, doesn't suffice for me. It doesn't. Just because he bowls leg spin doesn't mean you get into the England side. He's not done anything.
Well, then people said that about Hamid, and I mean, I'm questioning why he's not on the tour. I'm not bothered about first class experience. He went out there. He showed the characteristics that you need to be an international sportsman. He produced. Mason Crane came on as a substitute and took a one hand and diving catch. That's the sort of stuff which you can tell people are made to play international cricket. And I think he is. I think he's the sort of character that will step up and perform at the international level.
He may well play international cricket, and I'm sure he will at some point. However, you look at a better leg spinner, if you like, in Adil Rashid. What's better about Mason Crane than Adil? Because Adil Rashid can't crack it in Test cricket, and he's a very good leg spinner.
He's never been one to economy wise. He's always been expensive. He's never really contained too much.
Mason Crane's a containing bowler. Look at that. Those figures aren't too flattering.
Yeah. I'm just trying to look at his first class stats now.
Economy
is under 4 in first class cricket. Okay. 3.86. Okay. So with that, he's in.
You're touching 4 there.
My point with him is, he can only play if you play Stokes. So then you've got other options, and you can throw him the ball as a bit of a wild card.
Okay. I appreciate that point, but he is taking up a selection squad, and it's no good if he doesn't go very well. I feel like it's a bit of a waste. It's going to be under the pump out there. You know, playing Australia away, 20 years old in your first Ashes, and you bowl leg spin, it's very easy for the wheels to come off. But he may well play. It'll be interesting if he does. Put it like that. I'd rather watch him play than Gary Balance. I agree with that.
The hate for Gary Balance.
Anyway, we just don't like him. We're moving on to... I'm sure he's a really nice guy,
yeah,
by the way. He's a lovely guy. We just don't like the way he plays cricket. Anyway, we'll move on quickly before we upset anyone. Gary Balance's mum's listening.
Yes. Our only list that turned up.
Anyway, we'll move on to the Australia side, because we've rambled on a little bit in the England side there. David, you look at the key players for England, Alistair Cook opening the batting and Joe Root at number 4. They're the two main batsmen. It's the same thing in the Australia side. This is probably where the series is going to be make or break, is that battle between Cook and Root and Warner and Smith. Obviously, we know that they're in the side. A new player who's not played Test cricket before, Cameron Bancroft. He's, for those that don't know, he's a wicketkeeper batsman. However, he's not wicketkeeping in this side. He's averaging over 100 in Sheffield Shield cricket, which is the cricket they play out in Oz, which is made up of sort of 6 states. It's a very good level. He's averaging 100. They've dropped their previous opener, Matt Renshaw, who is English-born, by the way. What do we make of the decision to pick Bancroft? Because obviously it's quite a positive move. He's a guy in form. It's probably a justified selection in my view. I don't know, but a lot of the Australians, certainly the older statesmen, think that it's pretty stiff, tough decision on Renshaw. What do you make of that selection?
Yeah, so I think he's played 4 test matches so far. He's averaged 35 in them, so not too bad going. But in first class cricket, he does only have an average of 29. But it's clear that the selection is made on pure form from the first 3 Sheffield Shield games. I mean, he scored his double 100 last week for WA, and then the week before that he scored a 70 and an 80. So it's clear they're picking him purely on current form, because Renshaw, I think he's averaging about 10 in his first 3 Sheffield Shield games in all 6 innings.
Yeah.
So it's clear that they're going on current form. So I think the selection's justified.
I agree. I think it's a good selection. I think he's a good player. I think he's a dangerous one, being an England fan. I think he can score some runs. We don't know a huge amount about him.
I think that's dangerous. Mm.
Which I think's dangerous, yeah.
Well, I mean, you talk about picking him on form, and then you look at someone like Sean Marsh. So I've skipped over a couple, and we'll come back to a couple there, but you draw an interesting point, picking someone on form. Sean Marsh has been in average form. However, Australia continue to pick guys who are sub-33, 34 consistently in these big series. People like Chris Rogers who played, or Adam Voges, and guys who are aging always seem to get a spot in this team. Is that because they want that experience in there? I mean, they could have picked from a load of guys. Why have they picked Sean Marsh?
I think that's an interesting one. Going on the age point you said there, they've deemed Ed Cowan, who was the leading run scorer in Sheffield Shield last year, too old to play. He's 35. Sean Marsh is 34. It's an interesting selection, I think.
I think they're looking at it purely from the experience, the test match level. I think they know what they're getting with Marsh. They haven't picked him blindly. He's been around for years. You know, he's a successful first class cricketer. I mean, he's not proven it completely at the international stage, but they know what they're getting from him at number 6. Previously, he's batted a bit higher, I think. But I think with the youth that they have in the top order, I think he sort of fits the mould to come in at number 6. There's not many better options. He adds the experience. The only other way they could go is by picking another youngster. But similarly to the way we were talking about Milan, I think they pick someone who is that bit older, bit more level-headed. He's not one of your outright emotional, sort of typical Australian cricketers. He's a bit more contained, level-headed. I think he fits their sort of mould and suits the team that they have and the squad that they've got available.
I think it shows that they also think that their top order is vulnerable by picking someone like him. I mean, they could have picked an all-rounder in that role, especially with an injury-prone seam attack.
Well, you look at the all-rounders they could have picked. You either pick another spinner, which would have been Glenn Maxwell, to bat a 6. He's a batsman, but he does bowl a bit of spin. Same thing with Travis Head, who would have been another batsman slash off-spinner, but I don't think they want to pick a spinner at Brisbane. Or they could have picked Hilton Cartwright, who, for me, he's not good enough to play Test cricket. I mean, I've seen quite a bit of him, and I don't think he's good enough to play Test matches. I think Rico's spot on. I think they needed a guy in that batting order, because they have Smith, they have then Hanscom, who's fairly new to Test. I know he's had a very good start, and he'll be a really interesting guy to watch. For those who have not seen Pete Hanscom play, the first time I saw him, I thought, this guy is a walking wicket. The way he sets up, he's right deep in his crease. He's got a very funny grip with his bat, and I just thought he was cannon fodder. But however, he's done so well. He's done well overseas. He's played in India, did well out there. He's played over here for Yorkshire and did very well. Hanscom will be a very interesting player, but I think with having Hanscom there, who's fairly new, having said all that, and Tim Payne at number 7, who's not proven at international level at all, I think Sean Marsh brings sort of that experience into the side. He's done it before.
Just quickly on Marsh, I know this is just it's his 8th time he's been recalled. I know something about balance, like 2 or 3. There's 8 times they've recalled him.
Yeah. Some of those would have been through injury.
I think that's crazy. 8th time he's been recalled.
And he would have been opening the batting as well. So they've decided to go at 6, so probably looking at that second new ball. Maybe they're a little bit worried about that.
He's just solid, isn't he? Solid. Just a solid player to have.
I think he'll score a few runs.
Yeah,
I think so. I think he can just bat time, and if they do lose a few early wickets, he is someone who's opened the batting before. So, like you said, he'll be able to handle anything that comes his way to an to a degree.
You're shaking your head, Ollie, and it's worrying.
I just find it hard to get excited for Sean Marsh.
Who would you pick then?
It's a good question. That's a tough one.
You're all about entertainment, so I mean, it's fair enough. It's not very exciting watching Sean Marsh, but if you're the management of Australia, it's probably a comforting thing having him at number six. Tim Payne, we have spoke about Tim Payne, so we won't spend too long. He was actually understudy as a wicketkeeper last year in the Sheffield Shield to another guy. I can't remember his name, but he wasn't even keeping regularly last year. I'm not sure he's kept too much this year. I think he's just a favourite amongst Australian selectors. I just think they like his attitude. They probably like the way that he approaches his cricket, and probably like the way he plays. I mean, he scored a bit of a scrappy 50-60 against England in the warm-up games. That probably helped his cause quite a lot. So he's faced the attack. That probably played quite a big part. Is Tim Payne going to last the five tests, for one? And is he going to make a difference?
He hasn't kept in the Sheffield Shield, but he has been keeping in the Big Bash, hasn't he? He keeps
in the 2020, yeah. So he does well in 2020, given that, yeah.
Yeah, I think the keeping standpoint for the first class stuff is purely from an injury basis. I think they value him too, Tasmania value him too much to sort of just let him get injured keeping when they have other options, so to speak. But I think from an Australian point of view, there are no other options, pretty much.
Well, we look at those other options, looking at Peter Neville, who's not done anything really in Test cricket. He's a good gloveman, but he's not done anything with the bat. So they're dropping Matthew Wade. I mean, Matthew Wade's one of those fighting cricketers. He's played a lot of Test matches. How many Test matches has Matt Wade played?
Oh, just look it up.
But he is a player that scored runs against England before. I can remember in one-day series, so he's familiar with playing against these attacks.
Yeah, he's played 22 matches.
Test matches?
Test matches, yeah. Average of 28.
So not great, actually.
Not great, but...
I like his attitude, though. He's another a gritter, a fighter in that side. But they've gone with Tim Payne.
It'd be interesting to see how Payne goes batting a bit lower down, because that's not something really he's been experienced at for Australia, as he's always batted at the top of the order.
Yeah.
So we'll see how he goes batting lower down. I'd have gone with Neville. I'd have gone with Peter Neville.
You would have gone with Neville. Who would you have gone with, Rick?
I'm pretty happy with Tim Payne, to be fair.
James?
I agree. Tim Payne. Yeah.
Well, we'll have to bowl quite... He's very strong through the offside, so England will have to have some good plans to bowl straight to him, I think. Next selection is really interesting. Pat Cummings will probably bat number eight. He's not bad with the bat. However, he bowls in excess of 90 miles an hour pretty consistently. He'll bowl short spells. He'll almost have that Johnson role, if you like, this year. I know Stark's quite similar, but Cummings is a guy that comes on and has three and four over bursts and can make a real difference. I mean, you look at Cummings and you compare him to potentially Jake Ball or Overton that will play. There's no comparison with pace. No. He bowls 10 miles an hour quicker than Overton. I mean, how could it be another situation where there's a guy that bowls that quickly on decks that they are going to tailor to be quick? Can Cummings do something similar to what Johnson did?
If he stays fit, I think he could be dangerous. I think he could be really dangerous.
I don't think he's got that sort of aura about him, to be honest. I don't think it's a case of just running up and bowling quick. You've got to be able to intimidate the bowlers. I don't see it with him. I see it more so with Mitchell Stark, but with Cummings, I just don't see that sort of... He's quick, but I don't think they'll be at the other end scared of him like they were with Mitchell Johnson. I think that's a different kettle of fish.
So can Stark replicate what Johnson did?
Potentially, if he gets the handlebars going on the old moustache, oh, potentially. Well, yeah. Well, they're pretty vital for Johnson in 2010, 2013, whenever.
We're expecting Stark to do that. So Cummings and Stark bowl in excess of 90 miles an hour. They're both Stark ranked one in the world bowling. He must be quite... Can we check that?
I'll check that.
He's fresh off a couple of hat-tricks as well, isn't he?
Yeah.
Oh, he's been doing very well in the Sheffield Shield. Very well in the Sheffield Shield. He's a dangerous bowler. And he'll get plenty of wickets. He'll probably be around 30 wickets, I reckon, Stark. The other seam is Josh Hazlewood, being compared to sort of Glenn McGrath-type bowler. Bowls around 85. He hits the seam. He's an underrated bowler for me. I think he's world-class. I mean, what does Josh Hazlewood bring to this side? Because he's got two guys next to him that bowl very quickly. What's his role in this team?
I think he's, yeah, I agree. I think he's world class. I think he brings a perfect balance to their bowling attack. He can bowl a lot of overs from one end. He won't go for many runs. He gets steep bounce and he gets a good amount of seam movement. I think he's dangerous. I think he's a really good bowler.
Yeah, I think he's another one like Ryan Harris, just goes under the radar. He's sort of, you know, he actually will probably take quite a few wickets, but he just goes under the radar massively because of the big names. He's not the sort of glory bowler. He's not the trophy wicket taker. He does a job every game. But yeah, no, he's going to have a good series.
Do you have to bowl a lot of overs if Cummins is only going to be bowling short spells and maybe getting injured?
He might have to. I mean, that's the problem with the Aussies and losing Shane Watson, I guess, at number six, because Shane Watson used to fill that gap. But I think Nathan Lyon, we'll move on to Nathan Lyon. I think Nathan Lyon's that containing bowler. Unfortunately, Moeen Ali isn't, well, he's becoming a very good spinner, but he's not good at containing attacks, I'd say, especially in Australia. He'd probably struggle a little bit to contain. He's a wicket taker, that's for sure. But Nathan Lyon has come on leaps and bounds, I think. I think he'll play a big role in keeping England quiet, if you like. Do you think England should approach Nathan Lyon like Australia approached Graham Swan a few years ago and really look to get after him? Cause I think Australia will look to get after Moeen Ali.
Mm.
How do you think we should go about playing Lyon?
I don't think so. I think we can be suckered into that. It's easy when the other guys are running in and bowling at 90 mile an hour at you to see a spinner and sort of just take the attack to him. But I don't think that's the best way for us to go about it before. I think we've tried it before and it just doesn't work with him. He sort of always finds a way to get you out in the end, I think, if you try and play him aggressively. So I think he's the sort of guy that, especially guys like Root, once they get in, they can just milk him. I think so.
A lot of left-handers in that top order as well for us that Nathan Lyon could get into.
I mean, yeah.
Cook, Stoneman, Milan.
And then Moeen Ali further down the alley, down the order. And then if Stokes plays, it's another left-hander.
Mm.
Yeah, interesting point.
Just quickly back to the rankings. So you're number one. Is James Anderson at the moment.
Is that right?
And Lyon 7, Hazelwood 6, and then from the rest of the series, Broad's 10.
Where's Stark?
Stark.
Not on the list.
I'm in the top 100. I'm having a look now. He's 13th.
Is that
interesting?
Right? Very interesting.
Been injured for a bit, though, isn't he, I suppose?
Yeah, yeah. But still,
yeah, his last, it says, sorry, yeah.
I think everyone knows that Stark's one of the best bowlers in the world. He'll be more effective out there than James Anderson, I think, in my opinion. Okay, that was our Ashes 11. I don't think we actually picked an 11, but that was our debate anyway. Okay, now we move on to the final segment of our programme, the predictions. So we'll talk about who's going to be top run scorer, who's going to be top wicket taker for both sides, and the outcome of the first test, and the outcome of the entire series. So we'll start with the top run scorer, who we think we're going to be bagging the most runs, the most hundreds, if you like. I'll kick off. I think for England, Alistair Cook will be the leading run scorer. I think if he gets one score, he's the kind of guy that gets going. He scored runs out there in the past. I know he didn't in the last series, but he scored a lot of runs out in Australia. And I think Steve Smith was the obvious choice for Australia. I think he's an absolutely unbelievable player. I think he's the number one batsman in the world, in my view, especially in Test cricket. So there are my two, Cook and Smith. Rico, what do you reckon?
Right, so for England, I'm going to go for Bairstow. I think looking at the guy's character, sort of looking at their attack as well, I think we're going to be in a few sticky situations over the course of the five Test matches. I think he's the sort of player over the last 2 years shown he is not afraid of any situation. And if he needs to, he can dig deep and go big. So I'm backing Bairstow for England. And yeah, it's hard to look anywhere other than Smith, potentially Warner, but I think Smith will be the mainstay for Australia.
I think for England, I think it'll be Cook as well. I'd love to watch Cook bowl the Aussies. I'd love to watch him score runs. I think that'd be great. And they can bowl as short as they like at him.
Yeah.
So I think that'd be great.
So you get bored watching
Balance,
Milan and Sean Marsh, but you don't mind getting bored by Cook.
I'm happy to get bored. I used to love watching Cook and Trot.
Fair enough. Yeah, Cook, good decision. Yeah, like that.
And then for the Aussies, I think it'll be Warner. I think he'll score a lot of runs quickly. To be honest, we're going to open the bowling with Anderson and Broad.
Yeah,
and I don't know if they're going to cause him that much trouble.
He's the guy that's going to be keeping Joe Root awake at night because he can take a game away from you in a session. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how Warner goes.
Yeah, well, I'm Bairstow as well for England to run score. He's third favourite. I think it's a good little shout. Obviously, you look at it, it's hard to look past. Well, none of you said Root. He's the favourite to in the bookies.
Yeah,
he's the favourite
I think they'll go real. They're on about going real hard at Root.
And he struggled in the. He struggled before, hasn't he? He even got dropped the last time he was there.
Yeah.
I think noticeably, you'll notice they'll go harder at Root, and you'll see Pat Cummins and Mitch Stark be on every time Root goes into bat.
Yeah.
I think he'll be facing them every time. So I think Root will score runs, but I think he's going to have a hard time.
Yeah, no, Smith as well. He's hard to look past Smith. Yeah.
So we all went. Did you go Smith?
I went Warner.
You went Warner. Sorry. Warner. Okay, so three Smith, one Warner. Wicket takers for England. I mean, it's difficult. It's difficult to see who's going to take any wickets. That's the problem with the teams.
Their bowling attack's miles better than ours, isn't it? That's the real difference.
By far and away.
Conditions.
I mean, if you look at, I think David Warne must be rubbing his hands together looking at this attack. I don't know. I think Broad's just past it now.
I think he's going to get pumped, if I'm honest.
Really? I have no idea. I'm going to go with Moeen Ali.
I think Moeen Ali will be as well. I think they'll try and attack him, and I think it'll work in our favour, to be honest.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to go Moeen Ali, and then for the Australians, I'm going to go with Josh Hazlewood.
Okay, well, I'm going to go with Stark. Speaks for himself, really, I think. Yeah.
You've gone Stark and Moeen.
I think Chris Wokes. I think he's going to have a really good series for us. So I think he'll take a few wickets.
Yep.
And then I'm going to go Josh Hazlewood as well. I think he's a good bowler, I think.
Yeah.
I'm going to go Jimmy Anderson to go out. you're getting horrible looks.
No, that's fine.
Just for my pure love of Jimmy Anderson. Yeah. And then Stark. He's nearly odds on favourite in with the bookies to be leading wicket taker.
Yeah. Okay. So that's fair enough. I think Stark and Hazlewood pretty unanimous.
Just a quick one. Lions, fourth favourite. I don't know if that's
fourth favourite.
Maybe something to look at. But
he's not a guy that takes. I can't remember Lion taking a lot of fifers.
A Lion Alley double.
A Lion Alley double.
Back the spinners.
Goodness me, got a real betting guru over there. Okay, so we've done those predictions. We'll do the predictions for the game and then for the series. So I think England will lose the first test. I'm sorry to be the bearer of bad news for those out there, for those optimists. But without Stokes, I think England will lose the first test and the record that Australia have at Brisbane. I think Stokes will be recalled potentially for the second or third test. I think we'll lose the series. And I think that we'll lose the series 2-1. Sorry, everyone.
You're chucking some draws in there.
I think there'll be a couple of draws in there, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm gonna go for a draw first test match. I think there's rain about, looking at the forecast. It's a big opportunity. And then I think, looking at that, I think it could potentially be a 2-2 on the cards.
Very nice. You can do the weather for us after this if you want to. We need a new segment. 2-2. Okay, 2-2, 1-2-2.
Call me biased, but I think we're going to win 3-1.
Wow. That is bold.
That is very bold. What's going to happen first test then?
I think we'll lose the first test.
And then we'll bounce back and win 3.
Unless Rico knows more about me than the weather. Yeah. But I think we'll lose the first one and then we'll bounce back.
So you think Stokes will get called up and
Stokes will come in.
He'll just take over. Yeah, hopefully.
I have to agree. Yeah. As I said, Brisbane seems like a fortress for them, doesn't it? In that first test. So I can't see us getting anything there. And then I'm going to be Australia 3-2.
3-2, so you don't think there'll be any draws?
No draws.
Wow.
I'm anti-draw.
Brilliant. Okay, well, that is the end of our podcast. Thank you very much, guys, for all coming in. Rico, Ollie, James, and thanks to you, Will. That was the end of our first Ashes to Ashes. However, we will be back after the first test match, and we'll be talking about all the things that happened in the first test and building up to the second test with some fresh guests, some new outlooks, and we'll be talking more about cricket and the Ashes. Thanks for joining us, and we look forward to getting you back on. Thank you.